What's the mobilization for survival? What's MFS up to right now? Does anybody know? You ought to, because they've become the think tank for the far left. What are some of the organizations on the far right? What's Don Wildman up to this week? You know, he got 7-Eleven to stop selling Playboy. Who's he after this week? Is it you? I don't know. Is his attitude going to carry over to something else? I don't know. But we need to know what those latent issues are, because then you can put the issue out. Once an issue emerges, becomes an emerging issue, it's tougher, but we can still put it out. An emerging issue is one that's starting to get around now. Starting to talk about it, you start hearing about it, you start reading about it. You might even read about it in the newspaper. Never on television. Television is so far behind all the other media. By the time it's on television, you're in deep trouble. It is now already a hot or current issue. And believe me, managing it or dealing with it when it's hot is probably the highest skill level in our field. I got burns all over from 25 years of trying to do that. And I'll tell you, it is very unpredictable, very, very difficult. You know that. You've all been there. There's a fourth category that we need to be very careful of. We call them fallout issues. You know how when you finally settle the current hot issue, you say, whew, that's over with, thank God. And then we go on about our business? Ah, but in the compromise that settled the issue, there are always a little fallout, isn't there? Things that we don't quite tie up. Well, you know what happens. They recycle and come right back at us. And the worst part of it is, they don't have to go through these two steps anymore because they've already been through the fire. So those fallout issues rise right back up and hit us. The Teamsters Union is finding that out this week. The fact that four of their last five presidents went to Durrance Vile means that the accusations are leveled against their current president. And all of us don't have to think about it and say, gee, I wonder if he could be guilty, do we? I'll bet you if I took a poll right here, now 90% of you think he's guilty. Because we've been through it. It's been a hot issue. Now it's into the fallout stage. That's one of the ways of doing research to anticipate issues, is to know where is it. Because the response that we give, remember, research adds precision to decision. The response when we discover issues in these various stages is totally different, obviously. How we deal with a latent issue is generally to get directly to the proponents, or else to isolate the proponents. See if somehow, if it's such a crazy idea and they're a zealot, you know, it's pretty hard to put out zealots. Hitmen is the only method ever discovered for most zealots. And sadly, it's against the law. How many of you are using this research technique? Force field analysis. Are you familiar with it? It's pretty simple. You take an idea here, or a situation here, and you want to get there, okay? So this is the movement, okay? You do an environmental scan, and I'm sorry that that phrase is coming into some disrepute, because it's one of the great research tools for public relations. All an environmental scan is to ask what else is happening in society right now, or within the public, or on the issue we're talking about that may affect what we're trying to do with the issue. And yet it's amazing how many organizations launch out into the public as if the public was just sitting home all day with their hands folded, waiting to hear from us on our issue. And then up here you say, okay, what are the inhibiting factors? And you list them all up here. What is pushing down on this, keeping us from success? And down here, what are the facilitating factors in the environment? And by doing some judgmental weighting of inhibiting versus facilitating factors, we see what the forces are in the environmental field. What an aid to planning. It tells us when to time our activities. It tells us what things to avoid, what things to capitalize on. Are any of you using decision trees? I won't even go into decision trees. Look it up. It's too confusing. It takes a 20-minute discussion to get it understood to most of us, but it's a wonderful method. I take it you use PERT charts. If you don't use PERT charts, I don't know how you're doing your budget and your activity analysis. If you don't know what step comes first, what step comes second, what step comes third, your engineers do it, your accountants do it. Gee, do you think there's any connection why their data is accepted as hard data by management and ours is accepted as soft? Put it in a PERT chart, and management will think it's hard data. Any intelligent manager knows that it all started with a guess, just like all good accounting data starts with a guess, right? Well, think about it. I mean, what are sales going to be for next year? Who knows? But the accountants guess, and then they put the guess in the computer, and it gives them a great big stack like this. And they show up at the board meeting, and the management looks at that as if, my God, it's Moses' tablet. Well, how about it? Am I telling truth or not? And yet, it all began with a guess, and the guess is invariably wrong year after year after year, and management still doesn't catch on. Okay, why don't we use the same techniques? Because they're valuable. I'm not making fun of the accountants. I'm suggesting that we can use those techniques. Postulate the best known situation. Have evidence for it, and then track it out by research methods, which allow us to make presentations that give some substance to what we're saying. How about Delphi studies? Anybody using Delphi studies? Delphis are wonderful. What you do with a Delphi is you don't bother with Joe and Jane six-pack. Remember Joe and Jane, you know, they're not really who we're after most of the time, even in election campaigns. They're not really who we're after because they don't think that much for themselves. Joe and Jane are sort of sitting there, you know, they have a cold Coors in this hand and a channel flipper in this hand, and please don't bug them. They have their own agenda, and I'm not making fun of them. They're smarter than we are. We're all busy trying to change the world and change mankind, and they look back 50 million years and say, hell, I got it pretty good. And so they're interested in their family and their church and going camping and their hobbies. Not a bad agenda. And yet somehow we arrogantly keep thinking that our organizations are going to take them away from all that wonderful stuff and get them involved in, who knows, school busing, you know, or the economy. There's only one economy Joe and Jane care about. It comes in every Thursday in a check and goes into the bank. That's economy, okay? Now, the wonderful thing about a Delphi study is that it purposely discards them. And when I say them, by the way, that is also us, because there's an awful lot of issues we don't care about, aren't there? That we don't get involved in, we don't pay any attention. So we are Joe and Jane maybe half the time or more. On every issue, however, there's maybe 10% of the affected public that cares. And they're the opinion leaders. They're the knowledgeable people. A Delphi study asks them what they think, but it asks them in a participative way. It usually goes 1 to 4 rounds of study. I see some of you have used them. And you start out by asking them to share their knowledge and make a prediction. What do you think will be the big issues in healthcare in the next 5 years? Okay? And so they send it back. And then you tabulate all that and you send it back out and you say, this is what y'all said the first time. Now, how soon do you think these various things will happen? And they send it back and they tell you, oh, 1990, not till 2005. So you start getting a probability reading. Then you send that back and you say, now look, this is what your peers and you, on average, have said is going to happen and when. Do you agree with it? And if not, why? Okay, so now you see what you're doing? I mean, that is just powerful communication with these people. And furthermore, you've done something else. You have said to them, by including them, you are an opinion leader. Those have to be the most powerful words in public relations. You are an opinion leader, and I want to know what you think by doing some research together with you. And boy, talk about building relationships. That's a way to do it. Well, we could talk about a lot more of these subjects. We haven't got time. Let me just close by seeing if I can. I think I got another handout here for you. Let's see if I can find it. We have discovered some interesting things in recent years. One of them is that not only can we do research ourselves if we don't have the budget or if we have to, but we can even do research using volunteers from within the company or from the hospital guild or from the school staff. And that far from destroying the results, with a little training, this is the most powerful research of all for this reason. There is nothing as empowering to the chief nurse in the pediatric ward than spending 2 hours talking to Joe and Jane on the phone about how Joe and Jane perceive the hospital. See, they're doing it now. They're not reading your report. They're doing it. They're hearing those voices. And that kind of participation in the research process, we find totally powerful. We have a not a rule exactly, but almost a rule at Dudley Research, that all research projects will be participative. Even if for some reason people can't get on the phones or tabulate questionnaires, they will at least participate as a management group in writing the research statement and in reviewing the questionnaire. And frankly, as a researcher, I have to tell you, that just bulletproofs me. Because, you know, I don't really know your organization. Not your very organization. You live there every day. And I may use a word which for some reason has just become a dirty word in your organization. It may not be, you may be in a hospital and it's not a dirty word in any other hospital in the world, but it is in yours. And so by getting all of you to participate, you see, makes a better questionnaire. That kind of participation is important in research. Now, why do I end by mentioning that? Because if you're willing to try that, you can win over the doubters in your organization about the value of your research and about financing your research, because they have been participants. Remember the great psychological theorem: people will only get behind those ideas that they have had a voice in shaping. People will only get behind those ideas that they have had a voice in shaping. And if you can involve people in research, they have had a voice in shaping it. There's a wonderful school district in Illinois. The principal there is a great believer in research. He has no formal training at all, but he is so sophisticated that every year he does a study of the school district's really toughest problems. And before he does the study, he co-opts the leading critics on the issue being studied to tabulate the research. So if the PTA is after this teacher's hammer and tong, he sits the PTA down and he says, "I got this project, I haven't got any budget for it, and it's just a research thing, but would you guys mind, you know, tabulating this?" "Oh, sure, we'd be glad to." Okay, now put yourself in the shoes of the PTA. You're asking about the question that they feel is tough in the school, and they have to sit there and check off the answers. If their position is verified, they are now empowered to really make change because they know. But as is so often the case, if their position is a misperception, it's a little tough for them to still stick to it after they themselves tabulated the research. Remember I said that becoming a science doesn't mean we have to lose our creativity? That's creative research. That's really thinking about human nature and applying it to people's behavior so that research can add some real precision to our decisions. And increasingly, that's where it's going to be. Let me just close by threatening you with what can happen if you don't use research in this field, if you don't use it properly, okay? This is a story about the young lady who was graduating, and for a graduation gift, she was given a cruise in the Caribbean. It proves how important it is to do research, to know the variables that you're walking into. She figured that cruises are expensive, and she wouldn't be able to go on one again for a long time, if ever. So she thought she'd keep a log, you know, a diary of her cruise. And so I would just want to share with you her diary of a 6-day cruise in the Caribbean. And you'll see how it proves the essentiality of doing research to know the saber-toothed tigers that are out there ready to bite. On the first day, she wrote, "I arrived at the dock. The ship is big and white. The sun is shining on it. It's going to be a beautiful vacation." Now, on the second day, she wrote, "Wow, it's better than ever. The captain has asked me to dine with him." Now, on the third day, she wrote, "The captain, contrary to my expectations, is young and quite handsome and claims he owns an oil well in Texas." On the fourth day, she wrote, "Gee, the captain is still pursuing me. In fact, I'm a little worried because I think he's suggesting that I should do things that young ladies really shouldn't do on cruises." And on the fifth day, she wrote, "Zounds, my vacation is absolutely ruined. The captain is pursuing me so relentlessly that he says if I do not give in, he will sink the ship." And on the sixth day, just to prove the point, she wrote, "I just saved the lives of 600 fellow passengers." So unless you're ready to save lives, you better know what the variables are out there and how to meet them in advance. If we have